So I'm Brian Parker, and I'm a 2014 candidate for Oakland mayor.
Let's just get started with a couple of personal questions about your relationship to Oakland. What's your first memory of Oakland?
Yeah, so my first memory was as a child when the A's were winning their championships. And so I fell in love with the place. I knew it was a place that, you know, that I wanted to live at some point. And I was also, maybe it's the A's and the Raiders. It kind of all blurs together because I was 4 or 5 when the A's were winning their championships. And my mom had gone to college with one of the players on the Raiders. So I grew up in Stockton. We would come up to Oakland and see both of the teams play. And as a kid, took a bunch of field trips up to Oakland and San Francisco as well.
Exciting. What does the city of Oakland mean to you? What makes it special?
Yeah, I mean, I think what makes it special is a lot of different things, but one relates to the question we covered a minute ago, and that's what's your first memory of Oakland. I think when you're a child and something really stands out and something excites you, and to me, Oakland was always about the possible. It was when you fall in love with something, or at least for me, it was associated with winning and excitement, and also resiliency. I mean, I look at the Raiders, and yes, we look at those sports. But I looked at them as a team that were the blue collar, lunch pail type crowd that fought. It would, you know, knock you in the mouth if they needed to, but they were going to be resilient, get it done. So it was the whole, I guess what really stands out to me is this, the whole thing of never being counted out and always being resilient. The diversity clearly stands out to me as well about our city. I just think all the different cultures and people that are represented, and how when people move to Oakland, they're really buying into that diversity. It's important, and I think it keeps us all tethered together, and in addition to being close to Berkeley, which is where I went for undergraduate.
And this is a time of great change in Oakland going on demographically, financially, economically. What do you think of the changes that are happening right now in the city?
Well, so I think that change is good, and change is a constant. And I think what it portends, I think particularly with new leadership, and that's what we're here to talk a little bit about today with the mayor's race, we've got a very, very exciting future. The growth that I think can be in front of us with the right leadership and the right people come together is super exciting. I think one of the cautions, however, that we have to keep in mind is the thought about growth and making sure that it's inclusive for everybody, and making sure that incredible diversity that I talked about, that we don't push out families that in some cases have been here for generations because prices are rising and it's outpacing people's income. So I'm super excited about our future. One of the things that I want to make sure of, however, is that we keep the incredible diversity that Oakland has intact.
And what are some of the ways that you think that could happen? How do we keep diversity in the city?
Well, one, you're building this enterprise, the city, and helping it grow. So my experience is in helping organizations grow. And so when you're...
And that's in the private sector.
Well, it's in the private and the public sector, because I've been chair of our Workforce Investment Board. I got that turned around. I am one of the port commissioners, so on the board of directors of the port. And I think I'm doing my part to help it refinance its debt, get back on the growth path. And I think one of the things that you do when you're having an organization of any size grow, whether that's public or private, is what is the brand identity that you're trying to keep intact? And one of the things that we'll have to pay attention to is diversity and all that we do. And so what does that mean? That means that we need to have housing policies that fit with that. We have to make sure that there's enough affordable housing, both in old and new housing stock, and making sure that we're doing things from a zoning perspective, or negotiating with our with developers that are coming here to build housing, that there's 15% to 25% that can be used for affordable or low income or even moderate rate housing. So those are the structural things that we can do. The other side of the equation, though, is when you think about people being pushed out, it's a fairly simple economic formula, and it says, hey, the price of this stuff, right, housing, groceries, gas, all of that is outpacing your income. And one of the things that we need to focus on Oakland fundamentally is good jobs, and is living wage jobs. So if we can get people into living wage jobs so that their incomes are keeping up with the rising price of this stuff, I think we have a better chance of keeping them in their homes. And my plan is 20,000 jobs by the year 2020, and those would be living wage jobs. I think that's a really big part of the equation that lots of the candidates are not talking about.
When you say living wage, do you have a number? Most of the candidates actually, I think so far, have not really been talking about minimum wage. But there's a lot of talk in the Bay about, all over the Bay Area, about minimum wage increases.
Yeah. No, and I appreciate you bringing that up, and I'll distinguish. I'm not talking about minimum wage. I'm talking about living wage. And so minimum wage, which are entry-level jobs where we first get people, or at least the theory was, we first get people into the workforce, and then they gain experience, and they kind of move up. And so I think what's happened is that we haven't had enough jobs. I mean, we have double-digit unemployment in Oakland, 30% in East and West. So you have adults that are now trying to feed families, in some cases of four, on these minimum wage jobs. And so that's nearly impossible. So you're seeing people stitch together two and three of these minimum wage jobs trying to make ends meet. So going back back to the war on poverty, minimum wage was one of the best tools that we had on poverty. So we do need to raise it. And under California state law and Jerry Brown's plan, in July, it went up from $8 to $9 an hour. There's a proposal on the ballot that it would go up even further. And I am in favor of raising it. I'd like that raise to be staged over a couple of years so that nonprofits and our small businesses are not super adversely impacted by that. But switching over to what living wage jobs are, living wage jobs. And so if the minimum wage is nine and the proposals that are on the table are somewhere between 10 and 12, 25 an hour, I think living wage has to start at about $20 an hour. And so if you look at some of the jobs that I'm talking about at the Oakland Army Base in the port, where I'm commissioner, you're talking about jobs that start at $20 an hour and go up. Plus benefits. These are jobs that people can get into, gain more skills. And in many cases, down at the port, people are making $100,000 a year or more. That's the kind of pathway that I want to create. And we have to invest in training programs, partnering with our labor organizations, workforce investment. And again, I said that I led that board. But that means community colleges, and that means our workforce development partners around Oakland, making sure that people have the skills and they get prepared for these jobs of tomorrow.
So you spoke about port jobs mm-hmm. as part of this 20,000 jobs. What are some other areas that you see growth?
Yeah, so and I think it's a good question. And I think when we look, another way that Oakland will be successful in growing is if we focus on things that we can be great at. So port trade and logistics as a sector is going to be enormous. But three other sectors that I think we should be focusing on are healthcare and building around the healthcare companies that we already have there. Kaiser is one. Some of the other hospitals are another. But really looking at the Affordable Health Care Act and what it's saying, it is saying that, look, we need to move paper-based systems online, and we need people to manage those systems. So those will be permanent jobs that are created. It's also saying that it's more expensive to treat people in the hospital, so we want to do more in home health care and more on an outpatient basis. And so there'll be a whole industry that pops up around home healthcare businesses. And I think that this is where a lot of jobs will be created, and a lot of wealth will be created. Retail. Oakland loses about $3 billion in retail leakage a year to other cities, San Francisco being one. I think it's great to think in terms of regional economies, but I think if we could locate more retail in our own city, we're talking $30 to $35 million a year in tax revenue that we could capture. And then lastly is technology. Oakland is primed for a lot of reasons to grow its tech base. But last year, we only had 1% of all the venture dollars that were invested in the Bay Area. I think if we focus and we market ourselves right around the emerging food scene and the arts and the buildings and things we have, and around the workforce that's already there and that's graduating from Berkeley each year, We're talking about, in my plan, being able to grow that number to 10% over the next 4 to 6 years. So then what you'd be talking about is an infusion of $1.2 billion in new capital from tech jobs alone. And so I always tell people, close your eyes and imagine $1.2 billion is the size of our entire budget. So if you had a new infusion of capital that was equal to that, imagine then what the roads would look like, what the schools could look like, what people's quality of life would look like with all those jobs. So those are just a few of the other sectors.
And jobs and the economy are obviously a really important part of your campaign. But there's also the hot button issue so far in this race has been public safety and crime. Violent crime is drastically down in Oakland, but police and community relations are pretty strained. How do you see the Oakland Police Department, and what would you change should you take office?
Yeah, so you've asked a lot there, and so I'll go through and just chime in if we need to break the answer up. But I think we start at the front end, and why I talk a lot about education and jobs is because we've got to get to the root cause of what's going on. If we look at Oakland, in my opinion, it's the tale of two cities right now. And it's a tale of a city where some have a lot of opportunities and other areas, Fruitvale, East Oakland, West Oakland, have been systematically underinvested in for decades. When you have that kind of underinvestment in education and economics, what you get is a lot of poverty. And so we have a lot of poor people in our city. When you triangulate that or say, what's that statistically related to? Well, it's crime. So then we come back and say, okay, now we've got the proper context, and so absolutely we need more police, and safety is a central focus. But if we're really going to do something about our crime problem, it says that we must do something about trying to eradicate the mass amounts of poverty that exists in our city. And we can only do that through long-term planning and investing in education and making sure that all of our schools are up to a standard around the city and making sure that there's jobs and a thriving economy, not just downtown or in certain neighborhoods, but in those neighborhoods like East and West Oakland that currently have 30% or more unemployment. My safety plan is in 5 points. I do want more police because I think we need to bring down our response times and be able to solve more of the unsolved crimes. And so my number would be 800. I would hope that by the end of my term, or certainly by a six-year period, we could grow that to 900. Because if we could, then we could add on a traffic division, which we don't have, a metro division, which would be right downtown, further add to our investigative capabilities, and then really increase our commitment to community policing.
So does that 800 number then come with a little bit of realism? Ideally, you would say 900, but...
Well, ideally, speaking, we would say if we looked at benchmarking from around the states, we would say it's 1,200. So 800 comes with a lot of realism because we have to operate within our budgets. And I think that is one of the things that I bring from the private sector is being really realistic and pragmatic and then speaking the truth to our residents and saying, hey, let's not look at pie in the sky. Let's look at exactly what's possible, but let's build for the long term so that we can walk into a future with better numbers. So point number one is the 800 police. Point number two is more community and a deepening to community police. And I'll come back to that in a second. Point number three is cleaning up our neighborhoods and doing something about the graffiti and the dumping that exists. Cleaner neighborhoods are safer neighborhoods. Channel 5 did a spot on us on the evening news about some of my innovative efforts to do this and clean up our neighborhoods. Long term, I've already talked about education and economics. I do think we can use technology underlying this whole plan to make sure, if I said we can realistically get to 800, but the number's 1,200, I think we can use technology programs to deploy our officers in the smartest fashion to make sure that we're getting a multiplier effect and we're being as efficient as we can with the 800 officers that we do have.
What kind of technology are we talking about?
Yeah, so you would use some technology in the predictive analytics space. And basically what it would do is take the data that the police are already collecting through something called ComStat. And basically it interacts with that. And then you say, here are the 2, 3, 4 crime categories that I'm most worried about. And then literally on a shift-by-shift, day-by-day basis, you can deploy your officers based on this data in a way that maps to the crimes that you're concerned about. So on the community policing, and I think that this is an important point, and I think that this is one that I really bring a strength to being able to talk to. And when we talk about our community and our police, we have had some tension going all the way back to the 70s when we had the Black Panthers. So I think we have to realize that race matters in Oakland, and there's a narrative that it matters, and we must talk about it in an open and honest way. And if we look at the events in Ferguson, Missouri from the last month and a half, I think it's brought it into even more of a central focus. So making sure that we're taking our police, the existing and all the new ones, through proper sensitivity courses, that we are helping our residents and the police learn how to work together. And I would do that, at least in my plan, through the faith community and bringing both sides together and say, how are we productive together? And making sure that we homegrown more of our officers. Because if we do that, you have people that are coming from the community that reflect an image of the community that they're policing. And I think that we'll have a better shot at being able to do effective community policing, which all the books in that are written on crime say community policing is a way to safer neighborhoods. Can I take the last piece on what I would do about the police department? Okay. So on the police department, we have to realize that we have a big morale issue. Our police force has been under something called the Negotiated Settlement Agreement, or the NSA, for the last decade. And what this meant is a federal monitor has been watching us, and it really restricts your ability to put your own culture and your own identity on top of the police force. It's also meant lots of mandatory overtime. Those are deal with our shortages and that. So one of the things that I would do immediately is make sure that we get out from under the NSA and appeal it to the appeals court if we need to, because I want to be able to take back our police force, make sure that we remain committed to constitutional policing, because that's what the NSA is requiring. But then we start to build our own culture where you say, hey, look, yes, we will punish bad actors, and to the extent that police operate outside of the bounds that they should, but you have a mayor that's also going to stand behind all the good stuff that happens as well. We have to stop the incredible amount of police that are leaving each year. We're losing about 60 officers to attrition, to other departments a year, and we're adding 80 through the academy. So we're only netting 20. It's an incredibly inefficient use of the taxpayers' dollars. So I would make sure not only here, but in all areas, we are using taxpayer money efficiently. But we do need to address the morale and get more police so we can reduce the amount of mandatory overtime, that we can give the police the equipment, including the radios that they need. And I think then we'll be on our way to really having a police force that functions at the highest level, and that one that's really engaged in community policing and good relations with the community.
Speaking of good relations, one